Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airways. It's Saturday morning. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. 9.5 inches of rain. I feel like I live in Seattle. My sidekick, a mentor, a host of this great show, the Doc Talk podcast, Craig Roscoe's out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where they probably got an inch and a half of snow. 347-205-9631. This show goes by quick. It's quicker than Dan Rather doing 60 minutes. If you happen to miss it, get all the friends, sit around the campfire, roast the marshmallows, and listen to blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. The threes, Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And momentarily, we should get your special guest, Dr. Malik, in.
Thank you very much, Mark. You know, you asked me the threes, and typically my answers are all pretty consistent. Doing well. You know, our weather in Pittsburgh today, chilly, a little bit of snow on the ground, going to be in the 40s. Last week, you know, we were in the 60s and 70s here in Pittsburgh, and everybody was talking about spring training. You know, when does our baseball season start? When's opening day here, Mark, you know, with the weather so beautiful? But then you get a damper on it with a little bit of snow and cold. But that's what
no doubt about it.
So
no, you're right. I definitely think that groundhog saw his shadow, man. And they were right when they said six more weeks of winter. And right now, Dr. Malik is in here too. I'll sit back, man, the boards, and you can come back to me in about 20 minutes with questions, my brother.
Very good. We'll go ahead. I'd like to let our listeners know today our topic has to do with the stomach, the burning stomach, you know, a little bit of dysphagia, abdominal pain. And, you know, we brought an expert in again, and that's Dr. Malik. Dr. Raj Malik is a mature, sophisticated gastroenterologist in the Washington, D.C. area, has been doing these stomach problems for years and doing a good job. And just interestingly, you know, his scope is he does work with the esophagus, the stomach, the small intestine, the large intestine, as well as the liver. And I have a beautiful case for him today. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Malik. He is a friend of the show. He's been on for me a couple of times, done a very good job. Dr. Malik, good morning.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for spending your Saturday morning with us. And you know, we have kind of an interesting case that I wanted to share with you, and I thought would bring some information to our listeners, you know, with regard to certain types of stomach disease. And in general, you know, I have a patient that had come in just a little bit ago, a 35-year-old man, came in with complaint of sore throat. I've been having sore throat for a couple of weeks, off and on. I never had his tonsils out, complained about a little bit of heartburn. And again, it would come and go. He was a smoker. However, he started to develop some severe abdominal pain about 2 to 3 hours after he ate. He would have the sore throat typically all day, usually maybe around mealtime. However, this abdominal pain started, and it typically was 2 to 3 hours. He was taking Tums, you know, some of the over-the-counters, and really wasn't solving the problem. It wasn't getting better. We had seen him, and, you know, in the past, we've talked about the four pillars of healthcare that I use in my practice, where, you know, we listen to the patient, we touch the patient, examine the patient, we do diagnostic testing, and then decision making. So long story short, we did listen to the history, listen to what he was doing, listen to the timing, and indeed did some diagnostic testing. We did do a swallow test as well as did refer him to the appropriate specialist. And Dr. Malik, as you can imagine, the swallowing test did show us he had somewhat of a hiatal hernia. He had reflux, but he also had a stomach ulcer. And, you know, sometimes they're called peptic ulcers. And that's
right.
Kind of what's going on today. And that was, you know, I think kind of a very interesting case. We were able to go ahead and use, you know, gastroenterology and, again, use your expertise to talk about peptic ulcers. You know, what happens? What are they about? What is an ulcer? What kind of a sore is an ulcer? Where does it occur? Can you help us, Dr. Malik?
Sure. Ulcer, now, as you know, when you look at the stomach and the esophagus, we have a food pipe which goes from our mouth to the stomach. And the stomach is in the abdomen below the diaphragm. And stomach empties into the small intestine or the duodenum. You can get ulcers either in the stomach or in the duodenum. If you have acid reflux, you can also get ulcers in the esophagus. Now, the two most common causes of ulcers are either bacteria called H. pylori, which is resistant to the acid. And if you are suspecting an ulcer, you check you do testing for H. pylori. You can do a breath test, or you can test a stool antigen for the H. pylori. We frequently,
Dr. Malik,
go ahead.
Excellent introduction. I didn't mean to interrupt your introduction, but you know, with regard to checking for H. pylori, tell us about this breath test. We hear people talking about it. What is a breath test for H. pylori?
Breath test for H. pylori is you check the carbon dioxide in the breath, and then you ingest either a drink or a tablet containing urea. And the H. pylori in the stomach breaks up the urea, and then you check for the carbon dioxide in the breath again. And that will tell you if you have H. pylori present in the stomach. If it is, then you treat it with acid suppressants like Prilosec or Pantoprazole and a couple of antibiotics. Usually it's called triple or quadruple therapy because these H. pylori bugs in the stomach are quite resistant to therapy. So you have to use 2-3 antibiotics to get it under control. Usually the treatment lasts for about 2 weeks. And then you can check again for clearance either by a breath test or by a stool test.
Very good. And, you know, Dr. Malik, just as far as popularity of this disease, we were doing our research and we found there are about 4 million Americans a year that do have problems with stomach ulcers. And they were telling us that about 1 out of 10 Americans develop ulcers over their lifetime. That's pretty damn popular disease.
That is very common, absolutely right. And as we get older, the chances of getting ulcers get higher because you are on multiple medications. And some medications which we can take for arthritis like aspirin, buffarin, excedrin, enacin, Advil, Aleve, they can also be a cause of ulcers. And as we get older, you can have ulcers which don't cause any symptoms other than bleeding. So you can have an ulcer which starts bleeding, like having black stools or throwing up blood without any abdominal pain. So ulcers, younger people, you can have abdominal pain. But as we get older, I see a lot of patients who say, hey, I have never had an abdominal pain. Why do you have an ulcer? Because the only manifestation can be bleeding from the stomach from an ulcer. So we discussed, go ahead.
No, I was just, you know, I understand that. Where in the stomach do these ulcers occur? Are there particular places in the stomach or the esophagus that we can get these ulcers? Or is it somewhere they can be almost anywhere in the anatomy?
the stomach ulcers can be almost anywhere in the anatomy, but they are most common in the site called antrum, where the stomach empties in the duodenum. So you can have ulcers in the stomach, usually in the antrum or the upper part of the stomach called lesser curvature. And then you can have ulcers in the duodenum, which is the part of the intestine immediately after the stomach. So the most common ulcers are gastric ulcers and duodenal ulcers. Usually you can treat them medically. Rarely you need surgery. We used to do a lot of surgery, let's say 30, 40 years ago. But now surgery has gone way down for ulcers because we have good therapies available for treatment of ulcers.
Good. And Dr. Malik, why is it that women, as per the literature, are more susceptible than men to these ulcers? Is there any reason why?
Some of it could be hormonal changes. We don't know for sure. And some of the other thing could be if you take medications, you can be prone to ulcers. If you are on hormones or medications for arthritis, and when a woman take medication for osteoporosis, which can also cause ulcers. So as we get older, a lot of us take medications which make us prone to ulcers. And you're right, it's more common in women, but we don't, it could be various environmental factors, but we don't know for sure.
And Dr. Malik, with your practice, you do see women as well as men in your practice?
Absolutely. So like usually more women seek medical see the doctor than men. Men are hesitant to come and see the doctors. Women are more inclined, are more open to see doctors. And then if their husbands are having problems, then they bring their husbands also. So about like in the practice, 60% I would see women, for about 40% we see men.
Got it. You know, as far as if we talk about risk factors, things that, you know, kind of predispose us to this, you know, with regard to like medicines, I think you had talked about medications, and it's a pretty lengthy list that you can find.
Absolutely.
That can cause problems. And, you know,
yes,
as things that you had mentioned, you know, like the NSAIDs, Aleve,
right,
Motrin, Celebrex, steroids. One that also we had found, Dr. Malik, is coffee, with or without caffeine, alcohol use. And, hey, tell me about smoking. That's one of the premier causes of this as a comorbidity that increased people's risk. Have you found that to be true?
That's absolutely correct. Smoking and nicotine cause more acid in the stomach, cause more acid reflux because nicotine relaxes the sphincter between the esophagus and stomach, so you have more acid reflux. And smoking also reduces the immunity of the lining to acid damage. So if you smoke or use nicotine, you are more prone to get gastric and duodenal ulcers. So I usually tell my patients to at least cut down on smoking if they are smoking. And caffeine, again, can cause more acid in the stomach as a direct stimulator, and also relaxes the sphincter between the esophagus and stomach, causing more acid reflux. So many of my patients get up in the morning, drink a pot of coffee, and then they get heartburn all day. So, absolutely. Caffeine. And caffeine is also in like a soda we drink, like Pepsi or Coke or a lot of the diet drinks we drink has caffeine, which makes us prone to have acid reflux and stomach problems.
And, you know, just interestingly, the case that Dr. Malik, that I had started with, this 35-year-old, interestingly, you know, he was a smoker, and he did drink a lot of Pepsi every day. So he was 35 years old, still very prone to this. And, you know, Raj, as far as helping these patients, you know, where do you start? I mean, do we start with a scope? Do we start with dietary counseling? Do we start with medication? You know, how do we get the diagnosis together? You know, are we talking about biopsies? How do you counsel your patients when they come in? that they're referred from an ENT doctor. He sends them over and says, hey, I think this fella may have an ulcer. He has GERD, sore throat, abdominal pain after eating. What would you do with him?
So as you said, the four pillars of medicine, we take a holistic approach. When someone walks into the office, we get a detailed history. What do they eat for breakfast and lunch or evening meal? Do they smoke? Do they drink any alcohol? Do they drink any caffeine or soda? And after getting a detailed history, we do an examination to see if they have any tenderness in their abdomen, if you can feel any masses, or if they have been losing weight. Those are concerning symptoms. We get history to see if they have had any black stools, or if they have any nausea or vomiting, or if they have been having any trouble swallowing. So once we have a detailed history and physical examination, then we order some basic lab work like a blood count and chemistries to make sure everything is normal. We usually start them on acid suppressant therapy. You can either use over-the-counter Pepcid or Famotidine, or you can use Omeprazole, Prilosec, or Pantoprazole, or Nexium. And if the symptoms are persistent and don't go away, then the next step is to do either an upper GI X-ray or an endoscopy, where we go in with a lighted camera after you are put to sleep and take a look in the stomach. And you can also do biopsies and check for any ulcers in the stomach or duodenum. And the biopsies will tell us if they have H. pylori in the, if there's an ulcer and if there's H. pylori in the stomach. So that's the approach we take. And if you do have an ulcer, then you may have to take treatment for H. pylori for 2 weeks. If you don't have H. pylori, then usually treat with 4 to 6 weeks or longer therapy, depending upon how your symptoms are.
Wonderful. And, you know, Dr. Malik, you mentioned about, if I can go back just a little bit, about black stools. What does the patient look for? You know, as far as that, is it something that's pretty obvious? Do they need to do any type of a test to take to the lab, you know, as far as looking at that? Because the black stools, as you know, indicate there's been some blood within the GI tract. Is that correct?
That is correct. When someone comes and tells me I've had black stools, first I make sure they are not taking any medications which can cause the black stools. A lot of people take iron supplements. Iron will make stools black. If you take Pepto-Bismol for your stomach issues, Pepto-Bismol can make stools black. And if you eat a lot of spinach or some dark berries or cherries, you can have dark stools. So we can do an examination on this stool in the office to check for blood, or we can send people for a blood count to see if they have had significant bleeding and their blood count has dropped. If the blood count has dropped a lot, then sometimes we have to admit patients to the hospital till they are stable. Sometimes you need blood transfusions if you have had a lot of bleeding. So black stools are concerning, but black means bloody black or like tar. If it's just dark, that's not blood.
Got it. So it's a different situation. And, you know,
exactly.
As far as the two factors, I want to just use some words here. When we talk about acid in the stomach, pepsin is another word for acid in our stomach, is it not? Is that another name for the same thing?
Are you talking about pepsin?
Yeah, pepsin. Is that acid in our stomach, Dr. Malik?
No, pepsin is an enzyme which is being produced in stomach for digestion. That's not acid. That's an enzyme. So
it's an enzyme.
A stomach produces pepsin, the enzymes for digestion, and acid. So they are
got
two
it.
Separate things.
And, got it. You know, as far as, Raj, as far as causing this, if we look at cause and effect, typically the cause and effect would be increased acid production as well as H. pylori, which is an infection. Would you boil it down to that with regard to this disease entity, thick ulcers?
Yes, there are two factors in the production of acid. One is the acid for production of ulcers. And normally what we talk about a mucosal barrier, which is in the stomach, which prevents the acid from damaging the lining of the stomach. Now, what affects the mucosal barrier are medications like we discussed, aspirin, Advil, Anacin, Aleve, and also the bacteria called H. pylori can decrease the mucosal barrier. So if the protection, the mucosal barrier of the stomach lining is gone, then acid can act on the stomach and cause ulceration.
Wonderful. And, you know, Dr. Malik, if we're going to, say if we're going to go ahead, we've made the diagnosis, we didn't do a scope, but we did do an upper GI and things. If we're starting to treat these patients, would we start, as you mentioned, with something like the omeprazole and then an antibiotic for H. pylori? Is that kind of combined treatment you would use to start off?
That is correct. We usually start them on acid suppression either with like over-the-counter medications like Pepcid or Prilosec, Nexium or Pantoprazole. Then we check for H. pylori if we are suspecting an ulcer. H. pylori, the bacteria, we can check either like we discussed with the breath test or with a stool antigen. Now, you can also do a blood test for H. pylori called H. pylori antibody in blood. But that only tells us that you have been exposed to H. pylori. It doesn't mean that you currently have the bug H. pylori. So once you have made a diagnosis of H. pylori, then you treat it with triple antibiotics. Normally, you wouldn't give antibiotics unless you have shown that there is H. pylori present, because antibiotics can have side effects. So we don't want to use antibiotics unless we have proven that there is H. pylori.
Beautiful. And Dr. Malik, I'm going to go back just a bit. If someone comes in to your office and you want to know about H. pylori, can you do the test right there in your office, right then and there when they're there, the breath test?
Yes, you can do the breath test in the office. Not all the offices have the breath test available. Only certain labs have breath test available.
Okay, so you would
have to go to a special lab to do the breath testing.
Got it. And then for the stool antigen, the same thing, that have to take a
same
stool
thing.
Specimen?
You take the stool specimen to the lab, and the lab will test the stool antigen. Now, if you are taking medications like antibiotics or medications to suppress the acid like omeprazole or pantoprazole, you have to stop them for 2 weeks before you can test the stool for the H. pylori or the breath for H. pylori. So you have to stop the medications for a couple of weeks before testing for H. pylori, otherwise it won't show up.
And then, Dr. Malik, these tests, how long do they take to get back? You know, if we send our patient to the lab, do we have answers within 24 to 48 hours, or is
yes,
it a little
we
longer
can get,
than that?
Yeah, breath test, you can get the results right away, and the stool antigen should be 24 to 48 hours.
Wonderful. And let's say we've made the diagnosis of an H. pylori situation, and again, we think they have a peptic ulcer, and we start to treat the patient, you know, with omeprazole. You know, are we talking omeprazole like twice a day dosing, morning and night, or what's the strategy there with medication or with the Pepcid?
Usually once a day dosage is effective. Sometimes some people have symptoms, so they have to take twice a day dosage. So it depends on how you're feeling, how you respond. To begin with, you usually start it once a day. And if you have H. pylori, then you have to take the medication for the acid with antibiotics, which are called amoxicillin and clarithromycin, for about 2 weeks. Sometimes you have to, Pepto-Bismol is one of the medications you use for the H. pylori. Sometimes you take that when it's called quadruple or four medication therapy. So you either do triple therapy with the acid suppressant and antibiotics or quadruple therapy for the H. pylori antigen. And if you are taking any medications like aspirin or Motrin or Aleve, usually tell our patients to stop using them because they will further damage the lining of the stomach and may cause delayed healing of the ulcers.
Wonderful. And, you know, Dr. Malik, with regard then to these patients, like our 35-year-old male, when should he start to get relief? You know, if we're starting to
get
once you start
the therapy, you should get relief within 2-3 days.
Wonderful.
And if you have a duodenal ulcer, usually you have to be on treatment for at least 6 to 8 weeks for the ulcer to heal. Same for gastric ulcer to heal, you have to take treatment for 6 to 8 weeks. Now, duodenal ulcers are all benign. Gastric ulcers really can be malignant, that there can be cancer in there. So with a gastric ulcer, if you have done endoscopy and shown that you have an ulcer, after about 8 to 12 weeks of therapy, we will take another look in the stomach and take biopsies to make sure the ulcer is benign and there are no cancer cells hiding in there.
Got it. And Dr. Malik, I'm going to give you, you know, we have a lineup. I have several emails here with questions. I know Mr. Mancini in Los Angeles is, again, chomping at the bit. I wanted to bring up one thing. Let's go to Mr. Mancini, but I want to talk about maybe complications that can occur from peptic ulcers. So let's deal with that on the other side here. But
okay.
Mark, go ahead. Do you want to start? I have a couple of questions, but Mark, you go ahead.
Okay, my friend, I'm loaded up here, and let me get Fran from Brookline, Mass. That says, you know, ulcers, pretty much she gets, you know, pain sometimes after eating spicy foods, but you guys were mentioning Pepcid. She takes Pepcid before she goes to bed, and that kind of helps. Is that a correct remedy, Dr. Malik?
Yes, that's fine if you are having long-term symptoms of ulcer or stomach acid. To take Pepcid at bedtime is fine. But if you are having these symptoms more than 1 or 2 months, then you should probably see a doctor and get some testing done to make sure it's a benign condition and there's nothing else going on with your stomach. So the doctor may want to do an upper GI X-ray or an endoscopy to make sure there's nothing serious hiding and it's just a benign ulcer.
Right. Let me get another one. I'll give it over to your questions, Dr. Roscoe. Brad from Youngstown, Ohio, comes in and says, on the right side, how do you know if it's an ulcer, pancreas, you know, the liver? How would you know that if you don't go see a doctor right off the bat? Wow, another great question.
Dr. Malik,
that's
go
a good
ahead.
Question. Yes, we will. You should see a doctor. If you have occasional indigestion, which everyone gets, half the population has occasional indigestion, which goes away on taking Pepcid or Prilosec or Omeprazole. But if you have persistent symptoms for more than 2 weeks, then he's absolutely right. You need to see a doctor who may want to do an upper GI X-ray or do an ultrasound to look at your gallbladder and pancreas, or even do a CAT scan of the abdomen to look at the pancreas. Especially if you are losing weight, then you should definitely see a doctor to make sure there's nothing more serious going on. So that is correct. You have symptoms more than 2 weeks and they don't go away, time to see your doctor.
Good.
Oh, Dr. Roscoe, you want
yes.
to take the next two and you can come back to me in another 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I have about 20 here. But Dr. Malik, I have a question here. Is milk good for an ulcer?
Milk
wow.
was considered good for an ulcer, and for several years we used to have people drink milk for ulcers. But most recent studies have shown that milk has protein in it, which stimulates stomach acid. So although the milk looks like Maalox or Malanta, looks like an antacid, it's not good for an ulcer. It may have some immediate relief if you drink milk, but then it will stimulate stomach acid and cause more discomfort. There can be rebound acidity if you drink a lot of milk. So milk, we don't advise people to drink a lot of milk anymore when you have an ulcer.
Very good. I have another question, if I can, Mr. Mancini. Can peptic ulcer disease cause chest pain? Can you elaborate on that, Dr. Malik?
Yeah, peptic ulcer disease, if you have, it's usually in the pit of the stomach where you have the pain. Sometimes it can radiate to your back or your chest. More frequently, if you have acid reflux, that can cause chest pain. If you are having chest pain, you need to see your doctor and make sure it's not your heart. Once you have done testing for the heart and ruled out a heart condition, then you look for and treat for acid reflux. As many people think it's just their acid reflux causing the chest pain and they have underlying heart disease. So always rule out the heart disease first before you blame your stomach.
Beautiful. Go ahead, Mr. Mancini, do you have anything more?
Yeah, Nicholas from Davenport, Iowa, coming in and says, what are the symptoms of the ulcer other than maybe, you know, you can't pinpoint what food is causing the pain? Is there a symptom that you can, you know, that causes the ulcer? Or, you know, he says the appendix, you know that when you bowl over, and that would be the appendix. But how do you pinpoint when you have an ulcer problem? God, these questions are amazing.
Talk about the pain, Dr. Malik, please.
Yeah, pain, usually you get in the pit of your stomach with an ulcer, and it usually is associated with meals. Either you get it on an empty stomach, or you can get it after you eat. So if you are having pain in the pit of your stomach, which is associated in some way to eating, then you look for an ulcer. If you are having abdominal pain with nausea and vomiting, then you look for an ulcer. If your pain is associated with bleeding, like having black stools or you're throwing up blood, that's a serious condition, and that could be an ulcer. Sometimes
wow.
The ulcer does not cause any pain. In older people, the only manifestation of the ulcer may be just bleeding or black stools or throwing up blood. So it can have a vast array of symptoms, from abdominal pain to nausea to vomiting to weight loss to bleeding. So it could have different clinical manifestations. So any of these symptoms could be caused from an ulcer.
Wow.
Sure,
let me throw one more, and I'll give it back to you guys to roll it out. Joey from Bucks County, PA says, guys, this show is going. I heard Dr. Malik just before the holidays. I love when you guys run these shows, keeping me informed each and every week. Keep up the great work. Joey from Bucks County, PA.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Malik. Yes. If I could go on, Dr. Malik, could I have some natural and home remedies for stomach ulcers? Do you have any natural remedies and home remedies to treat stomach ulcers?
First is to eat a healthy diet with fresh fruits and vegetables. Avoid smoking. Avoid too much alcohol. Avoid too much caffeine. Avoid soda. So first thing to start is to start with a healthy diet, like a Mediterranean diet with nuts, fruits, and vegetables. Now, at home, we have home remedies like baking soda. Before we had other medications, we used to use baking soda, which is an antacid, and helps immediately with the symptoms. But it can sometimes cause rebound acidity. Many people think vinegar is good for stomach acid, but vinegar has not been shown to be very effective for stomach acid.
Dr. Malik, people talk about apple cider vinegar. How does that work?
Apple cider vinegar is good on the salad, doesn't help the stomach.
No, very, very good. You know, I'd like to continue here. I have a couple other things, Dr. Malik. We still have some time. You know, we talk about these peptic ulcers, these stomach ulcers, kind of benignly, but indeed these can progress to more serious conditions. What our research has shown, you know, they can cause, you know, serious bleeding. It's an actual, as you know, and you can sure elaborate here, perforation of the stomach. The other big complication is where it can cause obstruction or scarring to the top of the stomach or the bottom of the stomach. Could you elaborate a little bit on those, doctor?
Yes. If you have chronic acid production, you can have bleeding like we discussed. You can throw blood or you can pass black stools, which indicates bleeding. You can have obstruction where chronic ulcer is associated with scarring, so it blocks the emptying of the stomach into the intestinal duodenum. It can also cause acid reflux into the esophagus where there's scarring in the esophagus, and you can have trouble swallowing. Most of the times when we do have these complications, we treat it with acid suppression with medications, and we can go in with the endoscope and put a balloon in the esophagus to stretch it open, or sometimes we can stretch open the opening of the stomach into the duodenum if there is blockage there. Now, whenever you have a gastric ulcer, as we discussed, you always want to rule out malignancy. So if you have a gastric ulcer, you always go in with a scope after you are put to sleep and do some biopsies to make sure the ulcer is benign. So the complications of the ulcer can be bleeding, can be obstruction, and can be perforation. If your stomach blows up and it perforates, then you usually need surgery if you are having severe unrelenting pain from an ulcer. And you end up in the emergency room where they do CAT scan, which can show if there is a bleed, there is a perforation, and then you have to see a surgeon to have it fixed.
And, you know, so as far as a long-term result, if this goes untreated, it can be a very serious malady and even mortality to our patients, correct?
The last thing we want is a perforated stomach, correct? Right. We don't want that. Now, I would say that the complications of ulcers are rare. More than 95% of the times, you don't have complications. But 5% or 1 in 20 people will have complications like bleeding, perforation, or obstruction, which may need a treatment either with endoscopy or by surgery.
Got it. And, you know, doctor, if indeed, let's say that overall, you know, our patients come in, we've seen him, her, we've changed behavior with diet, they've stopped smoking, you know, they've cut down on the alcohol, they're doing their omeprazole, and, you know, we're out about 2 to 3 months, and they still have difficulty, don't feel right, they still have some abdominal discomfort. You know, with regard to, say, a refractory peptic ulcer, what do you do in those cases? If they've come back to you and says, you know, Dr. Malik, I'm feeling better, but I'm just not right. You know, do I still have H. pylori? Do I still have some kind of a sore in my stomach? What do you do, doc?
So we will get a detailed history first, like we discussed. Then we'll do some blood work to see if you have any low blood count or if you have any chemistry, like high calcium in your blood can cause ulceration. So we'll check your chemistries. Then we can, if you have had H. pylori, we'll test your stool antigen to make sure your H. pylori is gone, or we can do a breath test to make sure the H. pylori is gone. And if you're losing weight or you're having persistent symptoms, we will do an endoscopy to make sure the ulcer is healed. If all that has happened, some people need to stay on long-term therapy for stomach acid suppression. So we have had patients who have had chronic acid reflux who have to take Prilosec or Omeprazole or Pantoprazole long-term, because if they don't take it, then they can develop complications like Barrett's esophagus or strictures or very rarely esophageal cancer. So some people need to stay on long-term therapy for acid suppression. Now I get a lot of questions about long-term therapy with acid suppression, if there's any risk to it. I tell them we have to always to weigh the risks of treatment and not treating. Yes, with long-term acid suppression, you can get some osteoporosis or low magnesium levels. But if you don't treat, then you can have more serious complications. So we have always in life, we have to balance the risk and the benefits and then make a decision about the best options for therapy for going forward.
Got it. And, you know, as far as everybody, a lot of patients today, Dr. Malik, they don't want to take medication. You know, they'll say, I want to be well, but, you know, I hate the risks of medication. Do you have patients that maybe you would say, well, let's treat this for 3 to 4 weeks, and then maybe let's stop the medication, have you back, reevaluate. We might need to do it again. You know, kind of a roller coaster type treatment. Is that effective at all, or is that just spinning our wheels?
If you are seeing your doctors regularly and you stay on top of things, yes, you can do it. You can treat for a few months, see how you do, then stop it and see how you do. A lot of my patients, like you said, want to get off medications. And if they do, I have made sure they don't have any serious disease. They just have chronic acid reflux. I just tell them to take the medication as needed. So they will, if they have acid reflux, they will take it for a week or two and then stop it. And then if symptoms come back, they can take it again as needed. So a lot of times I tell them if they are concerned about side effects to take it as needed. and see how they do with it. But before I do that, I make sure there's nothing serious underlying.
Good. And, you know, as far as what we're thinking about here, you know, as far as underlying conditions, I mean, we're thinking about, could there be some kind of an immunodeficiency? Could there be some kind of a cancer? Could there be some type of an ailment that has gone undiagnosed as Lyme's disease or something like that? Is that what you think about sometimes when you're talking to them?
Yeah.
Or, you know, Crohn's disease, you know?
Absolutely. If someone has persistent symptoms or if they are losing weight, then we check them for one is the celiac disease or gluten intolerance, for which we can do a blood test or do biopsies during endoscopy to check for celiac disease to make sure they don't have gluten intolerance. And then if someone has ongoing diffuse abdominal pain or bleeding or weight loss, then we look for Crohn's disease, which is done by either endoscopy or by colonoscopy or by doing CT imaging of the intestines to check for Crohn's disease. Yeah, so if someone is having persistent ongoing diffuse symptoms, you look for other diseases also. A lot of patients who have chronic abdominal pain, if you're older, like in your 50s or 60s, we have to rule out something like colon cancer. So a colonoscopy is recommended on people older than 50 years. It used to be, now it's recommended after 45 years to check for any underlying colon polyps or colon malignancy.
Thank you. You know, I just had another email, Dr. Malik, and our listener is asking, how did I ever get H. pylori to start with? Where does it come from? How did they get it?
Usually it's contaminated food. It's something you ate sometime in your life and it had H. pylori. You usually don't get it from a family member. So if someone in your family has H. pylori, he's not going to give it to you. But if you have had some contaminated food sometime, you ate outside or ate something which was contaminated, you get the H. pylori. And usually by oral ingestion sometime in your life.
And may I ask, if you could give me this, what foods would have H. pylori in? You know, could it be meat? Could it be a vegetable? You know, where does it come from? Where does it live?
It could be in meat, could be in contaminated vegetables, could be any food we eat. So that's why you want to make sure that the food we eat, vegetables are washed properly, and if we eat meat, it's cooked to the right temperature. So if it is anything old or rotting or overnight has not been kept properly, not properly refrigerated, or you eat something which is kept at room temperature overnight, especially meat products, then you can you are prone to having some kind of it. Not only H. pylori, you can get any bug in your stomach.
So that overall, we need to be cautious. You know, and in the past, we've talked about, you know, you go to a restaurant, you know, wipe the silverware off. You know, again, be cautious about putting a pen or a pencil or something from a desk into your mouth. Is that what we're talking about here? You know, making sure your toothbrushes are clean, you know, things like that.
Absolutely. It's all personal hygiene. Your toothbrushes are clean. You're not putting anything in your mouth. And when you go to a restaurant, you want to go to a restaurant which is busy so that there's turnover on the food. If the restaurant is not very busy, they could be giving you food which has been laying around for several days. So like they say, you should go to a restaurant on a weekend or Friday, because Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, sometimes they have leftover food which they make you eat.
Got it. And, you know, Dr. Malik, what about intimacy? If one, you know, from a mate, kissing one, is it possible to transmit the H. pylori orally like that, or is it a whole different route?
No, it's usually by food contamination. By intimate contact, you don't get H. pylori. H. pylori usually in people is present in the lining of the stomach, and you can pass it in stool, but usually it doesn't come into saliva or any other bodily secretions.
Beautiful. I think I had that one of my questions. And Dr. Malik, when are our patients needing to see a surgeon, you know, with this ulcerative disease? Is there a point where you would say, you know, I've tried to treat this you're still positive, you still have H. pylori, you still have an ulcer. I did find a 4 or 5 millimeter ulcer that hasn't healed. You know, when do we send our patients to a surgeon?
It used to be up until 1960s, we would frequently send people to surgery. Now, in 1970s is when we started having all these medications for acid suppression, like Pepcid and Tagamet and Prilosec and Pantoprazole. So the incidence of surgery has gone way down. The only time we refer people for therapy is if someone we are suspecting malignancy. If you do biopsies and biopsies from the stomach ulcers, so show something suspicious, then I would send the patient for surgery. If someone has blockage or obstruction from scarring in the stomach and the food is not going into the intestine and the person is having persistent nausea and vomiting and it's not responding to medical therapy, then I would send a patient for therapy. Or if someone has a large hiatal hernia where the part of the stomach has been pulled up into the chest and it's not responding to medical therapy with diet and acid suppression, then I would send a patient for surgery for the hiatal hernia. So the incidence of surgery has gone way down because of the new medications that we have available in our armamentarium.
Wonderful. And, you know, Doctor, if one does get healed, which can we use the word cured of a peptic ulcer? Would that be the right term here, that we can cure it, we can get it healed? By, you know, our compliance with the anti-secretory therapy, we've stopped smoking, we're eating better foods, we've stopped the NSAIDs. Will this heal that we could say we as a practitioner have gotten this healed? Is that correct terminology?
That is correct terminology. Most of the duodenal ulcers get healed after 8 to 12 weeks of therapy. Same for gastric ulcers. After 8 to 12 weeks of therapy and treating for H. pylori, the ulcer will heal. In 90% of cases, you can heal the ulcer with medical therapy and the diet, like we discussed. Very rarely, you can have a chronic ulcer. Then you may have to stay on something for acid suppression chronically or think about surgery.
Thank you. And, you know, the other issue here is if we get the ulcer healed, does that mean we've eradicated the H. pylori? Is it gone? Do we need to be retested? You know, once we've cured this ulcer, is the H. pylori gone? Have we taken care of that problem?
Usually, once we treat for H. pylori, we confirm that the H. pylori is gone by doing the urea breath test or doing the stool antigen test. So once we have confirmed that the H. pylori is gone, it's usually rare for H. pylori to come back. It can have recurrence, but it's rare. So we usually test for H. pylori eradication whenever we have treated someone for the H. pylori bug.
And beautiful. And then, you know, Doctor, with regard to follow-up, if someone you've treated for an ulcer and H. pylori, you've gotten them well, how often do you see them again? If, you know, this young man, 35 years old, his sore throat is gone with treatment, no more abdominal pain, when would you want to follow him again? Or would you say, you know, you come back as needed? Is it something we need a follow-up on?
I usually tell my patients to come back in 6 months to a year so that we can keep an eye on things, maybe repeat the blood work, make sure, check them out, make sure they're examination is okay, they are not having any symptoms. I also give them an option that if you start having any symptoms, then call me and come and see me. So,
got it.
If so, yes.
Yes, and would you ever follow up in a year or two with an upper GI to look at the stomach lining, to look at the antrum, to see if that area is smooth now and healed, or is there no need to do that? You know, because we talk about these sometimes being asymptomatic in older adults. Would we want to do a follow-up of any kind, or isn't that necessary?
If it is a gastric ulcer, we always do a follow-up and take biopsies by endoscopy to make sure the ulcer is healed. Now, duodenal ulcers, if you have a duodenal ulcer, they're all benign. So if you treat them and the symptoms are gone, then we don't do any follow-up for duodenal ulcers. But for gastric ulcers, yes, we do. And if you are completely asymptomatic, you are young and healthy, you really don't need any follow-up checking, just a physical examination and getting a proper history and maybe doing some basic lab work to your to make sure your hemoglobin is normal, your blood count is normal, your blood chemistries are normal. That's all you need.
Wonderful. No, very good. Let's go back to Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Mark, what do you have?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions. Albert coming in from Poway, California, basically says, how often do you need to get your blood work done? This is very interesting because sometimes I'll get that pain on the right side, and I don't know if it's just, you know, an acid going through or gas. How, what would be the simplest solution to get the blood work done? Would it be every 6 months, Dr. Malik?
I usually do blood work once a year or every 6 months, depending upon your symptoms. If you are completely asymptomatic, I'll maybe do blood work once a year. But if you're having occasional symptoms, I may do it every 6 months. So it depends how you're doing. So I usually get a good history and physical examination and then decide when you need blood work. If you are losing weight, if you are having vomiting, if you are having persistent pain, then you need testing sooner. But if you are occasional heartburn, occasional indigestion, occasional gas, that's normal. That's nothing serious to worry about.
Okay, let me get a couple more. Ken from Alvin, Texas basically says, as far as a pain on the right side, what would be severe enough to go see the doctor? If it comes and goes, if it's once in a blue moon, what would be the reaction to go to a doctor?
If you're having an occasional pain, it could be just a muscular pain. But if you are having pain which is waking you up from sleep, or if you're having nausea or vomiting, or if you have noticed any change in your bowels, or if you're having any bleeding or black stools, then that's the time to see your doctor. Occasional gas, which lasts for a few hours, never comes back, you won't worry about it. Occasionally, if sometimes you pull a muscle, you can get some aches and pains for a week or two, and then it goes away. That's nothing to worry about. But something more than 2 weeks persistent, then you need to see a doctor.
Good. And here, Dr. Malik, can I ask one question here, Mark? You know, as far as abdominal pain with ulcers, Dr. Malik, is the pain more in the center of the stomach as opposed to on the right or left side? With a peptic ulcer, would you experience it more in the center of your stomach?
Most common is center of the stomach, in the pit of the stomach, but it could be on the right side or left side also. It usually is in upper abdomen. If you are having pain in the lower abdomen, that's more your colon or your bladder. So upper abdominal pain could be an ulcer, could be gallbladder, and as someone said, rarely could be coming from the pancreas, especially if you're losing weight, then it could be your pancreas.
Thank you. Very good. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Gail from Fort Myers, Florida. She's a regular on this show, Doc. And she basically says, you guys were talking about Pepcid. Does sometimes aspirin cause pain down there too, or does that kill it with the aspirins? Does that make a bleeding ulcer?
Tell him, Dr. Malik.
Yeah, aspirin is not good for the stomach. If it is a muscular pain or ache, aspirin will help. But aspirin causes injury to the lining of the stomach. And if you take long-term aspirin, you can develop ulcers and you can get bleeding from the ulcers. So I usually tell my patients to take Tylenol, up to 2 to 4 Tylenols a day are okay. That won't cause any damage. But if you're taking aspirin or Advil or Aleve, those are or Motrin or ibuprofen, all those medications destroy the lining of the stomach by damaging the mucosal barrier, which we discussed, so that acid injury can occur in the stomach. So aspirin you want to avoid if you are having stomach problems.
Thank you.
Yeah, we could definitely go 2 hours with this conversation, but we only got less than 5 minutes left, and as I give it back over to you, Dr. Greg Roscoe, to sum this all up with Dr. Malik, and then we'll wrap it up and look forward to next week.
Yes, sir. you know, I'd like to wrap the show up. Dr. Malik did an outstanding job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think with any type of disease malady, we need to kind of be aware of what's going on. But I think it all boils down to taking good care of our bodies. And if one is having an ulcer problem, a GERD or gastroesophageal reflux, they need to take the appropriate medication and for the appropriate length of time. And, you know, sometimes these are called anti-secretory therapies, the omeprazole, the Pepcid. We've got to watch aspirin, you know, or the NSAIDs. Aspirin and these kind of medications can cause erosion and irritation in the stomach. So we've got to be careful with that. We need, again, be very cautious what we put in our mouths. As you heard about H. pylori, yes, it's a contamination. We need, you know, clean utensils. Don't put things in your mouth that are dirty. Let's change our toothbrush periodically. Let's eat good, healthy food that are building blocks of nutrition to keep our body strong and our immune system strong, which, you know, are basics of taking good care of this body so that we don't get our body into trouble. Do you want to comment on that, Dr. Malik, also in summary?
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. It's taking care of your body, having a healthy lifestyle. I tell my patients to eat more fruits and vegetables and eat less processed foods. If you're smoking, cut out smoking. Don't drink more than one or two drinks a day. Cut back on the caffeine. One or two cups of coffee are okay, not more than that. Regular exercise is important. If you walk 10,000 steps every day, that helps your health. If you drink 6 to 8 glasses of water every day, that's very important. So it's a holistic lifestyle, taking care of all of your body. So it's like having a racehorse. If you have a racehorse which you bought for $1 million, you won't make it smoke and drink and eat unhealthy. You will give it the best food available and make it exercise. Same way you should treat your body with respect.
Beautiful. And I think respect is the right word. And, you know, I think it's a matter, I'll let you go in a minute, Mark, that, you know, overall, let's respect our bodies. We can use our healthcare professionals to help guide us, but we still need to implement good health every day on this body. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, and the emails continue, and, you know, basically one, I'll get to one real quick here. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon goes, you guys got to come back again and talk about gallbladders. That's another big subject that I'd love to hear you guys elaborate on. And Steve, yep, regular caller out of there of Oregon. We definitely will get Dr. Malik back. But as we wrap this thing up, Dr. Malik, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you if they need to get a hold of you, my good friend.
I'm working currently with Gettysburg WellSpend Hospital. So if they Google WellSpend Health Gettysburg, they can get hold of me.
And Dr. Greg Roscoe, as I give it over to you, another great show in the books. I know we're looking forward to next week when we bring on Armanini. That will be a good one, too, in itself. We just keep picking up steam each and every week, and I'm just so blessed to produce this out of Los Angeles.
Well, thank you. I'm blessed to host the show, and I'm very blessed to have excellent guests like Dr. Malik. Next week, Mike Armanini, a Pennsylvania state representative just reelected. We're going to talk about the new governor of Pennsylvania. I'll look at health care here, as well as get a little bit of a bird's eye view of what's going in on the national picture on healthcare. And Mike has a lot of good information for us. He's been a guest before on the show and can't wait to get back on to talk with us. So I'd like to thank all my listeners. I want to thank you, Dr. Malik, for an excellent, excellent topic discussion today. And then
thank you for having me.
No, it's really a problem. Not a problem. Mr. Mancini, excellent production and running the board today.
Well, and as I close it out, let everybody know if they're in the Pittsburgh area, how can they meet your great staff and everything?
The best way to do it is the email process, djrmd308@outlook.com. We man that every day, and we do have staff that should get back to you within 24 hours with questions answers or replies. So again, thank you, listeners, and I do appreciate being on the air and hosting this show. Thank you.
Well, for Dr. Malik, for Dr. Greg Roscoe, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. Tell all your friends. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you.